They made steady progress through a roasting afternoon, finding the ruler-straight remnants of an old farm road that ran from horizon to horizon across the baked land. It had obviously once been good wheat country, but it had long ago reverted to nature, with patches of dense scrub and mesquite, and occasional stands of oaks and beeches, and the shadowy deeps of a large forest hovering at the northern horizon. Jack found a pile of tangled string and amused himself by making a slingshot, picking up small rounded pebbles and winging them at old rusted cans and rotted tree stumps. To nobody's surprise, the albino teenager immediately showed phenomenal skill with his new weapon. Eventually, he spotted a rabbit in some tall grass about 50 yards from the road.
No one move.
Hey! We got supper!
They sat around a small, bright, smokeless fire that evening, savoring the rabbit on spits of green wood over the dry branches of apple from an ancient pre-dark orchard.
You ought to have kept that sling, Jack. You had a real skill with it.
Nah, got bored with it.
Jack leaned back, his shirt pulled up over his flat, muscular stomach, studying the shrinking yellow-purple bruise. He touched it gently with his long, pale fingertips.
Anyway, easy to make a nut if I want to.
Is the bruise better?
Sure. Still slows me some around the edges.
I reckon you might have a broken rib. Not that there's much we can do if you have.
Not much use for all your medical skills out in the untamed wilderness of the Deathlands, is there, Dr. Wyeth? By the three Kennedys, but that Coney was damnably as good at the second tasting.
Mildred was lying on her back, with her head in JB's lap.
One day, Doc, you old goat, you'll have something bad wrong with you, and you'll come yelping for a doctor, and I'll be the only one for 10,000 miles in 100 long years. And don't you forget it.
Think I'll go check out the neighborhood.
Well, if you meet any nice couples, then invite them back for cocktails and a late-night coffee.
Christy smiled up at him. Her brilliantly red hair reflected the golden highlights of the flames. Its relaxed condition was a true indicator that she didn't sense any immediate danger close to them. Her eyes glittered at Ryan like burning emeralds. Ryan tried to remember details he'd learned from some of the old mags, vids, and books of what else neighbors used to do before the missiles rained down.
They can watch our vacation movies.
If all else fails, ask them if you can borrow a cup of sugar.
I'll take a couple of canteens and see if I can come across some good water. Lasslat's already turning brackish in this heat.
Ryan patted the butt of the Sig Sauer in an automatic reflex before stepping off into the darkness, choosing to move north through the dry land, moonlight throwing weak shadows across a narrow, winding game trail. The moon snuck behind a bank of low cloud that rested on higher ground to the far north, and the land darkened for a few minutes. Ryan kept going, his excellent night vision, even with only one good eye, carrying him safely and silently along.
Wolf?
Ryan spotted the glint of water just to his right, where there was a clearing in the brush. He moved with extra care, sensing a change in the night. There was a new stillness, and even the light southerly breeze seemed to have dropped away. Not a leaf was moving on any of the bushes around him. Ryan stooped by the edge of the water and cupped his left hand. Dipped it into the cool fringe of the small pond. The water was cold and fresh. It lay in a shallow saucer of cropped grass. It was obviously a drinking hole for deer and all kinds of small predators. Ryan checked carefully up and down the rutted strip of dried mud and found no human tracks nor the spoor of any larger beasts. The moon broke free of the dark clouds once more. Ryan slowly dipped the two canteens into the stream. He hung them on his shoulder. He'd left the Steyr back at the camp. The hunting rifle carried a starlight night scope, but it wasn't the kind of weapon for a casual evening wreck. The Sig Sauer was snug in its holster. He decided to walk a little farther, hoping the exercise would help to stretch and strengthen the muscles around the fast-healing wound in his right thigh. The land was fairly flat, and he strolled toward the fringe of the forest, pausing yet again at the smell of smoke. A cooking fire, with meat on it. Meat that smelled like it was burning. Wolves and coyotes didn't light themselves fires in the evening, unless they were some kind of new mutie that Ryan had never heard of, which was always a possibility in Deathlands. The smell grew stronger with every step, and he crouched, squinting above the tops of the dark chestnuts, spotting the coil of smoke, pale against the moonlit sky. Ryan cat-footed between the spaced trunks, seeing that the fire was in a clearing less than 100 yards into the woods. As he moved closer, constantly stopping to check that nobody was going to cold-cock him on his blind side, he could make out 2 ragged figures hunched over the fire. Both had long hair. Only when he was very near could he be certain that they were male and female. Ryan waited a few minutes, checking that the couple carried no guns, and saw the glint of metal at both their waists that told of hunting knives. When he felt safe, he walked out into the circle of the fire, the Sig Sauer at the ready.
I come to borrow a cup of sugar.
The man and woman leapt to their feet with a strange agility.
Who are you?
The man was in a fighter's crouch, while the woman remained more upright. In the cold moonlight, Ryan could see them both with a new clarity. The man was around 5'6", squat, about 150 pounds. His arms seemed too long for his body, the knuckles of the left hand almost trailing in the leaf mold. A mane of the filthiest hair that Ryan had ever seen partly masked the brutish face.
No danger, just passing by. Just take it easy, nobody gets to be hurt.
Ryan was fascinated by the man's hair. It was matted and tangled, and seemed to contain a day's supply of food. There was a piece of green rotting cheese as large as a thumb stuck above the right ear. As Ryan stared at it, he was horrified to see an opalescent cockroach, scales glittering in the silver moon, crawl from the man's ear and make its way toward the cheese. The woman was shorter and skinnier, her withered naked body visible through a twisting shroud of rags. A small rodent's carcass was stuck on a spit above the fire, the outside black, charred and smoldering.
Your meat's done.
Not for us. Only like it burned. Scared us jumping like a bandit snatch out the dark.
Sorry. Didn't mean to. You live in these parts?
Yeah.
The woman stood by the fire, her thighs apart, seeming to deliberately expose her sex to him.
Oh, shit.
Ryan looked away, wishing he'd kept on moving. Apart from his disgust, there was something else that was keeping the short hairs prickling at his nape.
Lived here forever. Was more of us.
The man reached down and squeezed something in his crotch. Pulling his hands back up, he examined a strange goo, then put it in his mouth. Ryan managed to avoid throwing up.
A bill?
The woman shook her head, and bits of bark and dried dirt flew from it.
Not bill. Small. But him and me is all that's left, and we don't walk good.
The couple looked like they were in the last stages of some gross degenerative disease, hollow-eyed, with dried and weeping scabs around their crusted mouths. Ryan simply wanted to make his excuses and leave the clearing.
But Jack, mister?
The woman held out a clawed right hand, showing that most of the nails were missing.
Help us out, it would.
Jack I got's the Jack I keep.
He was aware of the canteens hanging heavy on his shoulder. It would be easy enough to fill them up again on the way back.
You got a container, I'll give you good water.
Ryan held out the open canteen. The woman's eyes rolled back in the sockets, showing only the bloodshot whites. The man dropped to his haunches. His head settled in his shoulders, and for a moment he resembled a crouching predator, eyes gleaming yellow under the mane of hair. Flecks of reddened foam dripped from his peeled-back lips.
Fire blast.
Ryan backed off a couple of paces, his index finger on the trigger of the Sig Sauer.
Water chills! You chill us!
Rabies. You both got rabies. Wiped out your whole community. Now you're the last.
Blood saves!
The woman eyed him hungrily, sliding toward him. The knife was back in her hand. Now the woman was on her back, her legs kicking, fingers scrabbling, while blood poured from the massive exit wound at the back of her angular skull. The man stared at his dying companion, and then, foaming with rage, looked at Ryan. He powered himself up in a vaulting spring toward Ryan's throat, knife in his outstretched hand, open jaw showing fangs, curved and yellow. Freakishly, the full metal jacket round went clean through and out the back, without striking anything vital, missing the creature's heart, lungs, ribs, spine, and scapula, and barely slowing him. He was incredibly strong, fueled by the ravening sickness that was sliding fire through his veins. Ryan got a grip on the creature's right wrist, which held the knife, managing to keep his thighs pressed together to stop the intruding knee. The man tried to bite his face, and Ryan barely pulled away in time, knowing that if blood were drawn by the infected creature, then the odds were that he too would be contaminated. There was a vital pressure point beneath the breastbone the jacket taught Ryan, and the one-eyed man went for it, feeling his fingers beginning to slip in the sweat on his enemy's wrist. It was only a matter of moments before the knife hand was free again. The stink of death from the gaping jaws was overwhelming, and Ryan kept his own face turned away, his fingers groping, feeling for the point, hard under the upper ribs. Ryan pressed it again with all his strength. The man kicked clear, rolling in the dirt, right across the fire. The knife dropped from his peen-racked fingers, and the man came up in a crouch. Ryan didn't hesitate. He was already back on his feet. For a moment, his hand went to the taped hilt of the 18-inch steel panga, but he winced at the thought of the rabid blood smearing the clean blade, so he left it sheathed on his hip. Stepping in, perfectly balanced, he kicked out with a steel-tipped combat boot. The man's head slumped loose on his broken neck.
Son of a bitch!
Ryan backed away and picked up the Sig Sauer. He then checked himself to make sure he hadn't taken any unnoticed scratches or wounds in the tussle. He was clean. Shaken and bruised, but unharmed.
Ryan, we heard the shots. You all right?
Uh-huh. Met the neighbors. They didn't have any sugar, and they turned out to be hostile.
They still hostile?
Nah, not anymore. Bunch of rabid sickos. They attacked me when I offered them some water. Had to put them down. They didn't draw any blood, though. I'm all right.
Sure you didn't even get a scratch, Ryan? Not really a good enough light now to check you over. It's best to do it first thing in the morning.
I'm fine. Christy squeezed his hand.
In any case, Mildred, there's nothing you could do for him if they'd wounded him. Just a matter of waiting and seeing.
Guess so. Least we can clean it thoroughly. Cuts down on the odds.
Think we should post a watch?
Nah.
Sure? There might easy be other sicko freaks around in the woods.
They said that they were the last survivors of a small community of dirt poor folk. All the others had died. Something brought in rabies. Bats, maybe? There were some in the trees.
Night's passing. Best try to catch up on some more sleep.
When we go on to Memphis?
Tomorrow, Jack. Don't know how far. A couple hundred miles, JB?
Easy. Long way. Sure we want to take the trouble to go there?
You know I want to see if Graceland is still standing, John. You promised. We can find a highway and pick up a lift.
All right, all right. I don't recall ever hitting old Memphis, Ryan.
We'd been so many places over the riding years with a trader that names and vills all blurred together.
I can't recall it, JB, I must admit. Anyway, let's all go get us some sleep and start fresh in the morning.
Why not? Then tomorrow can be another day, and I shall still be relying on the kindness of strangers.
Doc looked at the blank faces around him. Only Mildred was grinning knowingly.
Let it pass, my trusty companions. Let it pass.
An hour into a muggy, humid morning, they picked up on the ribboned remains of what rusting green signs told them had once been old I-64. Now it was a faded patchwork of broken slabs and undulating sections of concrete, overgrown with full trees 100 feet high in places. But there were weaving tracks along it, showing that motorized transport still used the highway. And it showed them the way west to Memphis. In several places, there was stark evidence that this region of Deathlands had been badly hit by the earthquakes and major geographical changes that had altered the face of the United States of America and turned it into the new world of Deathlands. The road disappeared under rolling hillsides, and lakes spread across its original route. Twice the highway vanished completely in a clean, savage cut, and suddenly reappeared up to half a mile away in either direction. In each case, a rutted trail showed that the wags had carried on around all of the sky-dark obstacles. They'd been walking steadily for about 3 hours, and covered, at Ryan's estimate, close to 13 miles, and they hadn't seen a living soul. Now Doc sat on a stone by the stream, wafting away a cloud of tiny midges that seemed attracted to the rivulets of sweat that settled in the crevices of his cheeks.
I guess old-timers wouldn't be able to recognize very much of this.
I don't believe that there's much in this tired land that old-timers would recognize, young fellow. Mighty little.
Where's this lift that you said we were going to pick up, Mildred? I'm kind of interested in Elvis's home, but to walk 200 miles through this heat and damp? I'm getting less keen.
Mildred stood, looking at the yellow fields around them and the strip of tarmac that wobbled away to east and west.
Well now, like my pa said, you have to pray before you can get your prayers answered. Maybe he was right.
She pointed to the east behind them, where they could all now see a faint smudge of dust on the horizon. Ryan uncoiled with the grace of a sidewinder and unslung the stire.
Can anyone make it out?
Christy had about the best day sight, and she stood frozen for several seconds.
5 or 6 wags, trucks, some kind of convoy coming slow and easy this way.
Could be what we want. Or it could mean a serious firefight. Everyone take cover. Condition triple red. We'll see what we see. Move it.
Everyone hustled away from the center of the highway, looking for concealment among the ridges and rises. Ryan was last to move, staring at the cloud of dust, the rifle cradled at his hip, finger through the guard, wondering what would come next. As it turned out, what came next was the answer to Mildred's prayer. Mike Sullivan was a jovial, sweating, red-faced man, head of the convoy of 5 trucks that were shipping grain from a large farm in eastern Kentucky, heading southwest all the way to what remained of the metropolis of Memphis. He'd been more than happy to pick up the 6 heavily armed strangers, spreading them in pairs among his vehicles.
Nobody robs grain wags. We got us blasters as well. And I reckon there'd be more blood spilled than profit made.
You going all the way into town?
Nope. Do business with the Countess. A little way this side of the big bill.
Countess?
Sure. The Countess catch him. Runs her own bill tight as a tick's ass. Mighty powerful, handsome woman. Got herself through at least 3 husbands, and the Lord knows how many friends. Each time, she walks away stronger than ever. And they mostly end up buying themselves a 6-foot plot.
Never heard of her.
Ryan glanced behind, making sure the others were still following in line. He could see Mildred and JB perched on the high front of a nameless rebuilt wag just a dozen yards back, its rear brimming with golden grain. And there was the shock of Jack's white hair, with Doc alongside him on the 3rd vehicle in line.
You'll get to meet her. Everyone passes through Memphis gets to meet the Countess. She got some triple-eyed people around her. Not a woman to cross, if you take my meaning.
Sullivan had 20 good men working with him, with a couple of hard-faced women to do the cooking and washing. Everyone was related to everyone else, and all came from the same farmingville. Sentries were posted for the night camp. The offer from Ryan to let them share the guard had been gently but firmly refused. It was done with a generous good nature, but Ryan would have done the same thing if he'd been in the farmer's place. You didn't just up and trust armed outlanders to the extent of letting them watch over you while you slept. It was a good night, and Ryan slept dreamlessly.